Come on in, fellas. Hey, John, how are
Hi,
you?
I'm good. And you?
I'm good as well. Good as well. Are you smashing some dinner or what?
Yes, my post-workout meal.
Okay. What's your food of choice tonight?
It's 200 grams of vegetables and 200 grams of baked chicken breast, and then I put an apple cider vinegar. That's it.
Nice. Seems basic, but works.
Well, we've got an end date for the cut.
Yeah. When's that?
It's going to be December 22nd. Greg wants me to get photos taken before we change the diet.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
So that's a day that the guy that I told him he wants me pumped up. So post-workout, so I look as good as I can, I guess. And that's coming up in 12 days.
Awesome. Good. How's the hunger been?
It's been okay. It's I feel like I'm more in a recomp than a cut. But I'm making some changes just to dial things in for the last 2 weeks. Like simple things. Instead of balsamic vinegar, I'm putting on apple cider vinegar, which according to the label has no calories. And then I have a weakness for peanut butter, so my massage therapist, who's got a bodybuilding background, he told me to get peanut butter powder, which doesn't have the fat, and that can satiate my craving without endangering my calories.
Yeah, with the flavor that comes from it. Yeah. Okay, that's good. Well, I wish you best of luck with the rest of your cut here going into the Christmas holidays. And what a great time to end it, 22nd, just before it all
Well,
expires.
originally we're gonna do this coming Monday, but I've got a busy schedule next weekend. If I'm gonna get the photos taken at the gym, I need to do it when the coach is there,
Yeah.
and it just seemed like it gives me an extra week, and I can do that.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, best of luck leading into it. Good for you, my friend.
Thanks.
And welcome everyone else who's now in on the call here tonight. Got about 10 bodies in here, it looks like. It's the last call for me for the 2025 year. So thank you for those who've attended any of the ones that I've run in the past before. And I look forward to seeing you guys again in the new year, the 2026. But why don't we start off today's call here? And I want you guys to think deeply about this one. Usually we always share what's your most recent win, in the last month, or possibly the last time that we've had a chat together or from call to call. I want everyone to kind of look back into the last 12 months and see if you can identify, maybe not the biggest win, it could be the biggest win, but maybe a win that you've knocked off, that you've a goal, you've hit something regarding your health. And our health is always, physical, spiritual, emotional. It's not always just what we lift. But if anyone here would like to share some of their big or one of their big wins they got in this past year as we reflect.
I've got one.
Hey, Bill.
Hey Chris, good to see you. I know I'm a little overdressed, but that's what happened today. So, honestly, my big win aside from keeping myself healthy this year is I actually I've gotten a lot of compliments on my physique, particularly from some of my neighbors. And we were actually out on a boat about 2 months ago. One of my neighbors has got a boat, so we were out there and both of my neighbors have made a comment. They're both dads. They're busy guys, but they both made a comment about, they should hang out with me more to get in more shape. And so I've started like a little neighborhood accountability group. And it's pretty cool to see them looking up and doing some things. And it's also held me accountable. And I've been able to grow my biceps by over a half an inch in the last month and a half, 2 months. So
Nice.
it's kind of minor, but I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's minor. If it's important to you, it's major. It's always nice to be identified, because essentially what someone is saying to you is they're like, hey, I acknowledge that you purposely do things to make your body better. Like that's what a compliment is when someone like you can just be handsome, right? Like Bill, you're a handsome man. But some people just are handsome. It's like you didn't do anything to be handsome, but to have muscle, like you have to do something. Like you gotta put some time and you gotta put some effort into that. So it's people just that they're just admiring or addressing that you put some time in. So it's a good feeling to have. So good for you, man. I'm glad someone finally noticed. But I'm sure a lot of people have noticed, since I remember your starting photos. That's good. I've got a few mics on here. Would any mic like to share?
Yeah, Chris, I can share. I think I've been with Mushroom Intelligence now for just about 4 months, and I've always been active, always worked out, played sports and what have you. But I got in a funk where I stopped working out. I drive by the gym, make excuses and things like that. And the last 4 months, thanks to Chris, we talked about this on our coaching call. I don't have competitive sports anymore. I don't have coaches. I don't have practices that I have to be at. And the accountability that Chris held me to got me out of that bad rut. And so I think moving into the next year, I think I've got the momentum and the motivation. And I just want to say thanks, Chris, for helping me out. And that's for me my big personal, I guess, fitness win for this year.
That's awesome, man. I'm glad that you got that from our time together, and I'll acknowledge that I know everyone on this call here thought for more than a few days before they signed up with Muscle Intelligence. It would have been on the mind for most of us for probably weeks or months, maybe even years, to be like, I need something. I need a boost. I need accountability. I need motivation. I need direction. Whatever it is, everyone needs something, because it's so true, especially for guys. After high school, after college, like once we get after the age of 30, like what's drawing you to competition anymore? Sometimes the worst thing you can do is, from a competitive side, is have your family, because all of a sudden it's like, well, there's no hockey Tuesday nights or ball, whatever sports you were into, right? If you get comfortable in your career, it's the same thing. Right? If you don't have to move your business or move up the ladder and stuff, and then all of a sudden, like if there's no competition, like why would you get your ass to the gym? And then all of a sudden, when you start going to the gym and you get a little bit more competitive with yourself, or you wanna look like someone else over there in the gym, then that really brings out the best in you. So that's awesome, Mike. I'm glad you got that. John.
So a year ago in a week it'll be I had shoulder surgery, supraspinatus reattachment, bicep reattachment, and I as a result I transitioned from working to be competitive in the CrossFit world to just concentrating on joint stability and muscle and bodybuilding. And Greg took over January, and I feel like I'm doing really well, and I feel I'm at the point where I've transitioned from just getting stability and muscle to actually being able to do much more in terms of bodybuilding. And
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to go ahead and sign up to work with the future program with Ben start for next year.
Awesome. That's good. Yeah, sometimes, I mean, I understand when you're coming from a sporting background, like CrossFit. CrossFit's objective is to move weight from point A to point B, to sling it for reps, for time. It's output driven. That's how it's always established for your results. Okay, did you hit this many reps? How long did it take you to do it? But for bodybuilding, muscles can't count. They have no idea how many reps you did. They don't know what the WOD time is of the day. Muscles don't know. All they know is tension and fatigue. And if you have a weak position, it will be exposed and you won't be able to create tension there. And then the body gets beat up. So it's almost like when you're doing a group fitness workout, a CrossFit workout, you're all competing for the same thing. When you're doing bodybuilding, it's you versus your muscles. Your mind is saying, let's move this from point A to point B. And your muscles are saying, I just know tension and fatigue. And then the battle is you telling your mind, slow it down, control it, own every position. And one of the best, I don't know what to call it, a cue. The best phrases I ever heard was, I remember when I was in college, I was working out with my college professor one day, and We were doing Smith machine squats, and he said, "Tell me when it starts to burn." I said, "Okay." And I'm going up, I'm going down. I'm like, "It's starting to burn now." It was like maybe 10, 12 reps in. He goes, "Okay, now the set starts." And I was like, "Oh shit, that's not good." I was ready to be like, "I'm done." What I learned there is like when you want a physical change in your body, you got to take it to different levels. And sometimes that's understanding how much fatigue is there. And then if you want the muscles to grow, that's what you got to go. It's not the output that you're always looking for. It's fatigue, fatigue, fatigue. That's good. Paul, what about you, my friend? It's a big win you got this past year.
I guess if anything, in progress toward the 1,000 pound club. Last time I tested, 625 pounds for 3 lifts.
There we go. Where were you at the beginning of the year? How close were you?
First test I had was like I think 565, but last test was in the beginning of October, so it's been increased since then.
That's awesome. That's good. How did you stay on track for that? Was there any road bumps on the way?
Maybe slight injuries, but just keeping on track with the training, with trap bar deadlifts, bench squats, trying to get down far enough, and doing bench presses after the
Yeah,
workouts.
that'll do it. I run a powerlifting course in a class at where I am here multiple nights a week. And one thing that I always tell all the athletes in there, to get strong, you have to keep doing the things you want to do to get strong at again and again and again and again and again. The weights will come with that. The weights don't come when you get a tweak, when you pull something, when you get an injury. You can't get stronger when you're injured. So an example would be like, okay, let's do this workout today. It's 3 sets of 5 at 80% of your max. You go into the gym, you do your first set of five at 75%, and it feels really heavy, and you're like struggling to maintain form. You put on 80%, you do 2 reps, your form's all over the place. You rack the bar. What do? Well, the program said 3 sets of 5. So I'm going to take these and I'm just going to do another set of two, maybe another set of two, and then maybe 1 set of 1. You could do that. The chances of the technique getting better with the weights getting heavier is very low. So the chance of pulling or straightening something go up. But what everyone should have done is don't do the 80% on that day, because at 80%, you might only get a total of 6 or 7 reps over 3 sets. Reduce that 80% to 75% or 70%. Do your 3 sets of 5, because now you've just done 15 quality reps. Your next training session, you go in, your body's not beat up, you didn't tweak anything, you can train again. So all of a sudden, you're building a workout after workout after workout of doing reps. You're doing reps, reps, reps. And the accumulation of the reps leads to the adaptation of muscular strength. So to get strong, you just got to keep doing the same thing and just don't fly too close to the sun, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Cool. That kind of leads us into our topic of the day here. We're doing a combination of strength and cardio for longevity. How do we mix and blend the two? And I feel that this was a good topic for me to cover, as I was kind of voluntold to handle this one. But it makes a lot of sense because this is something that I've been doing for a while now. So let me just make an adjustment here. So this is going to be very much more of an open conversation, because I want you guys to tell me where you are, what you think, and then we're going to have chats about it. So if you've been on my calls before, anytime we've talked about strength and stuff, I've always posed certain questions, and I'll do this again. Your definition might have changed. There's no right or wrong answer here. But how would you define strength? We're talking gym-related stuff here. So if I were to say, Mike Shaw, like, what is strength to you? How do you see strength being expressed? What would that look like? How would you define strength in your world?
I would say strength. I would define it as being able to move my body
like my own body under its own weight, having strength to say move something into the house. Yeah, maybe just a little combination of those two things, you know?
Okay. So
Yeah.
you're able to move your body, you're strong with your body, you're able to move things around the house or into the house, out of the house. Okay, that's good. Bill, what would you use to define strength?
Strength for me, I think, is a couple of things. I think physically, I like the idea of well-rounded strength, which kind of is what Mike alluded to. Like, I want to be strong enough to, you know, carry my family, move significant weight. I like feeling strong, and I think to me that is, you know, I have some specific numbers in mind, right, for, you know, bench press or deadlift or whatever. But I think strength in general, also for me, that tends to bleed over into mental fortitude. So I kind of merge those two because I think that physical and mental kind of go together. But I think if I was to define strength, I would say in order for me to know that I'm strong, it would be showing up consistently and pushing hard to be able to do new things.
Okay, so a physical component measurable against an object such as lifting a weight, so much weight, and then also mental strength to be able to do things. Okay. Rudolph or Rudy. If you're on the call here, if you can, you want to unmute yourself. How would you define strength in your world?
What's up? So for me, strength would be like mentality, like how he mentioned mentality, and then also just like being able to like carry stuff for yourself, you know, be able to lift stuff like how he also mentioned for your family. And yeah, bro, just stuff like that for me is strength. That's how I see it.
I like that. We got one guy in the program here, Zach, and he's been here from almost day one, maybe like 3 years or so, 4 years. And Zach took his family on a vacation, and they went on this big hike. And on the hike, his son blew his ankle, like rolled his ankle, and they had to hike back like another 2 or 3 miles. And his son's like 8 or 9 years old, and Zach carried him. And Zach came in the program not able to carry himself 2, 3 miles. And then, you know, a few years later, he was put in one of those situations where as a parent, you have no choice. You have to do it. Now, I think that a lot of us in here, mental toughness could get you through something like that. But Zach, at the same time, he was also physically fit from all the training to the point that he was able to carry his son, and it was easy for him. That's what he said. He said, I expected my body to break down and I was fearful that I wouldn't be able to finish this. But, you know, at the halfway mark, I'm like, this is nothing. And that this is from some of the training. So, combination sometimes of the mental strength goes so far, but then the physical component of it as well. We can use strength in many forms of fitness. We can measure it when it comes to barbell training. That's the simplest way, and it's the most common way to look at it because you can always compare apples to apples. If Paul wants to get in the 1,000-pound club, he knows exactly what 1,000 pounds is. He knows how to load it up on three different exercises, a variation of a squat, bench, and dead, get over 1,000 pounds. Good. Paul, you chose the trap bar deadlift over a sumo or conventional deadlift, right? So now you're getting specific, and that's a great form of strength. Strength can also show up in cardiovascular training as well. So sometimes people think that cardiovascular training is just heart and lungs, heart and lungs, heart and lungs. What about tissues that have to keep heart and lungs going over and over again? There has to be some form of strength there. From a cardio perspective, if I said to all you guys here, hey, run. We're going to run 10K. We're going to run 10K at a fast pace. What area of the body do you think would hurt or maybe struggle to complete that 10K? You could talk about yourself, or you could just say what you've heard of people getting before if they just run 10K, or I said 20K, a real long distance. What do you think? Gassed. Mike, so you're saying gassed. So I don't think we're talking about flatulence. So can you elaborate a little bit there on the gassed?
I yeah. We used it at a fast pace, so automatically I just went to just being gassed, like, huffing and puffing.
Okay, so you're talking cardiorespiratory fitness. Your
Yes. Yeah.
body cannot get enough oxygen in to the muscles to allow it to be able to replicate the same thing over and over again. Yeah, that's gas exchange. That is VO2 max. Okay, volume per minute that your body can take in of oxygen and utilize well. That is the gold standard of cardiorespiratory fitness is your VO2 max ability. So you're right. You can only take in so much based on your fitness level. Okay. Someone else, what else do you think might break down or get really sore from doing a 10K run?
Your legs and your tendons, if you're not used to running, your joints are going to be taking a beating.
Yeah, buddy. The muscles are gonna get, a burn sensation in there at some point, but then the connective tissues. Those are the big ones. To have good cardio for something as specific as running, you need to have tissue tolerance. Tissue tolerance is measured in strength. In the barbell world, the best way to get strong in ranges of motion that the tissues are lengthened, if you've been on my calls before, remember me talk about adding in pauses. So if you're weak in the bottom position of bench press, program a bunch of pauses in there. If you're weak in the bottom position of a squat, program a bunch of pauses in there. If you're weak breaking the floor in deadlift, program a bunch of pauses. Those positional isometrics will make your body, so your tendons, your muscles, everybody work together and expose the weakness. And over time, that weakness becomes a strength just from adaptation. With running, it's the same thing. The Achilles tendon tends to be the big one on running. People whose hip flexors become an issue on running, that's not a tissue tolerance. That's a the compensation with a terrible running technique. They just don't run well. They need better technique on their running because they're running with a compensation. The hip flexors getting all jacked up. But the connective tissues of the lower limb, the Achilles, the soft tissues on the bottom of the feet, what they're meant to do is actually absorb energy and dispense it through the rest of the body. And the stronger the tendon becomes, the better it is at doing that. So strength has a very large carryover into cardiovascular. Can cardiovascular health have a big carryover into strength? What do you guys think?
I would assume yes.
Tell me a little more. That was
My
Jeopardy. We
assumption
got to go with the exact answer here. What do you think?
my assumption would be, and I guess I'll say my experience is, particularly if you're lifting heavy or even doing longer sets, notice that, like, okay, you start to become winded. Even over my journey, as I've gotten stronger, I think my cardio and my heart being able to recover quickly allows me to get to that next set faster. So I think cardio is definitely a limiting factor.
Yeah, if you remember, Bill, remember back in the day, I'd throw eights at you, sets of eight. Man, a set of eight with a tempo, right? Like a 4-0-1-0 back squat sets of eight. That's a long set. That's a 2-minute set almost. So there has to be some cardiovascular fitness in that. But if your cardiovascular fitness can handle four sets of eight with a 5-second count, your ability to do more reps goes up. If your ability to do more reps goes up and your volume goes up, those are the key indicators to developing strength. Just going into the gym and hitting singles all the time is not going to lead to getting stronger. In the sport of weightlifting and powerlifting, you get tested on a single. And that was a protocol that people would use for a duration. And then all of a sudden, someone came out and they said, well, I'm going to do sets of two, sets of three, sets of five, I'm going to do sets of eight. And all of a sudden, they started taking off and just getting stronger and stronger and stronger. Eights don't make you better at one, ones don't make you better at eights. But when you blend the two together, you tend to get much better at it. I used to, this is a funny story. I find this funny. These guys didn't laugh at this, but I've done 88 powerlifting competitions. That's a lot of chalk. But there's some older guys in my area who've been around way before me. And I remember one guy specifically, and I said, "Hey man, how many meets have you done?" He started laughing. He goes, "I stopped counting at 300." I said, "What?" He's like, "Yeah. I started as a teenager, and this guy now is in his early 70s." He's like, "Yeah, I started as a sub junior and I competed, and he's up into the master four category now." He said, "I'm like 300." He's like, "Yeah." I said, "How do you do 300 competitions?" Well, he lives up in Belle River, so that's on the border of like Detroit. So he told me that it was very common on a Saturday to compete in Belle River and then drive over the border and go compete again on Sunday. And I'm like, "You just do competitions back to back days?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "No one really trained. We just kind of got together and lifted max singles, and those were in sanctioned events." I'm like, "Okay." So he comes from the school of just doing the singles, right? And then over time, it evolved to doing more reps. But that's crazy to me to max out back-to-back days. But things were different in the 70s, I guess. Oh, and they would show up with beer. Like they'd bring their belt, and a case of beer was like the standard for these guys. It's like if you show up without your belt, no problem. But if you show up without a case of beer, like, leave. Different time. So your cardiovascular health can help you with your strength because it allows you to do more volume. And John, you might be a good example here because you came from CrossFit doing aesthetics, going into bodybuilding. How was your body able to handle the volume? I'm going to assume you were pretty good with it. You were probably sore, but you were able to handle it quite well.
I built it up over like 5, 6 years. I remember my very first CrossFit workout. I couldn't even get through the warm up on the assault bike. I'm dying. And then I just kept showing up and doing it and working with a coach, working on my cardio capacity, working on my gymnastics, working on my Olympic weightlifting. Working on the wads, going for times, and I did well enough so that I, in the 65 plus category, I ended up in the top 250 in my age group.
That's awesome. Having a good aerobic fitness, like a good cardiovascular fitness background, allows you to recover quicker between sets. It allows you to recover quicker between workouts. So, having cardiovascular health lets you do more weight training sessions a week than not having it. If you are a bodybuilding fan, you may remember one guy, Marcus Rühl, the German bodybuilder. Mats, you remember him? I know you're on the call here, I think. Still?
Yes, sir.
Remember Marcus Rühl? Do you ever see his DVD? One of his first DVDs back in the day?
I haven't seen it, but I've heard you reference it before, maybe a year ago.
So Marcus Rühl, whose traps got so big he couldn't back squat anymore. Like the guy was just so he didn't fit in cars. He was ridiculous. But there's videos of him in the day, and he'd be in the gym, and he didn't fit in most of the machines. So he'd use like chest press machines as like a shoulder press. And you just see him like banging like a monster set. The whole stack's there. There's plates on plates attached up there. And he was like on stage, he was like a 306, 308-pound guy. He was almost 310, shredded, just ginormous. But he would then put the stack down, and he would be winded. You would just see like this whole shadow of a body just bang, bang. And you're like, whoa, that guy ain't gonna make it. Like he's not gonna make it to noon. He's gonna die. He'd be so winded, and he'd take these really long rest periods between sets to be able to do another set. And then you'd show him outside the gym, and he was a smoker. Like he smoked cigarettes. It was the most ridiculous thing, But this was in the 90s, and whatever. He didn't obviously put a lot of emphasis into the cardiorespiratory work. Ironically, for the guy who was known as being the biggest, if he didn't smoke and he had more cardio, he could have been bigger because he would have been able to recover more between sets. And Ben mentioned this to me back in the day. He said the first thing he would do when he started to cut a prep for a show was he wouldn't start adding a bunch of cardio and he wouldn't reduce a bunch of calories. he would decrease his rest periods and do a lot more giant sets. So he'd end up doing like two, three, four, five exercises in a row, and that would push his caloric expenditure, that would push his conditioning and his cardiovascular as well. And then it also set him up to be able to recover better before he started reducing calories, because when you reduce your calories, it's hard to recover compared to having a calorie surplus. So the cardio works quite good to develop the strength training sessions. So one is not always going to be better than the other, but they're going to work together synergistically. Now, how can we use strength to make us more robust with cardiovascular work? Like we talked about before about specificity, if you want to get really good at strength in one specific area, you train that one specific area. If you want a 1,000-pound total, you pick your three exercises, you do that. From a cardiovascular perspective, you got to pick the same types of cardio as well if you want to get better at it. So we mentioned before with running. If you want to get better at running and you need tissue strength, then you're going to want to be strengthening the lower limbs and stuff. What's another form of cardio besides running? What other things could we do to test our cardio on? Sex.
Unfortunately for most of us, it's a short bout. That's it, right? I would say like air bike or hit lookouts.
I'd say if you have sex longer than 2 minutes, you're doing it wrong. That means you can't get your girl off in under 2 minutes. No, air bike, air dime, assault bike, echo bike, 100%. Like those types of things. Those are resistance cardios. So to get better on like a machine like that, you need a metric. You need a measurement of some sort. VO2 max testing is a great way to test some of those things, but there's no real data on VO2 max testing with those types of bikes that I'm aware of. With a regular bike, 100%. I mean, that's the gold standard. Running on a treadmill, 100%, it's gold standard for VO2 max. But what you can do is you can make your own standard. And the good news is you can give yourself a test now, and then you can look to improve it. So there's some that's been around for a while, not really scientifically driven, but one could be take your age in calories and do that on one of the bikes as fast as you friggin' can. And do it every year on your birthday. So every year you add one more calorie. If every year you're doing it faster than the previous year, your cardio is getting better on that specific machine. Like that's a no-brainer. So if you think about it, if you are 50 years old and you're going to take an assault bike and do 50 cals on it, that's probably going to be a 2 minute all out effort. If your cardiorespiratory fitness is quite low, it might be a 4 minute effort. If it's quite high, it might be a little lower than two, but it's a very simple test that you can use with those types of bikes. You're not going to be in the gym hitting the punching bag, and that's going to help you get better at the bike. You're not going to be in the gym just doing lunges, and that's going to help you get better at the bike. You got to be on the bike doing that to get better at doing the bike. But I mentioned before, like with running, you can strengthen connective tissues to make you better at running. Other forms that you guys might want to look into within your gyms from a cardio perspective is going to be rowers. Those are great. You can do VO2 max testing on rowers all the time. It's a 2,000 meter row test. Once you just row that as fast as you can, all you got to do is go to Google, VO2 max test, concept two rower. Pops up. It asks you for your age. It asks you for your time of completion, and then it gives you a number. You can always use that number to compare time and time again. But instead of being very scientific and data driven, how do you know you have better cardio without testing it? How would you know?
So everyday expenditures, things you do all the time, and whether or not you're getting more winded from that activity than you used to.
Yeah, that's a great source of physical measurement. The things that I normally do at home that might make me sweat, they might make my heart rate go up. Does that still happen as much? These could be daily chores. These could be things around the yard. If you're where I am, this is shoveling every couple of days. A lot of snow here, and that's a real simple way to do it. So there's a way to assess your cardiovascular just by comparing to things you used to do or you normally do. Hold on a sec. Seeing the chat here. Improved resting heart rate. That's a big one. That's a really big one. And I love guys monitoring that. The rings are great. The watches are great. I use my resting heart rate, lowest resting heart rate you get in your sleep. So every morning when you get up, take a look and say, what was your lowest number? As your cardiorespiratory fitness gets better over time, that number should go down. Your fitness level between interval bouts, how quick can you drop your resting heart rate, is also a good indicator. So who's known as the greatest hockey player of all time? Wayne Gretzky, right? So, from a points perspective, the guy was just the man. Now, when you look at Wayne Gretzky's career, a few things stick out. One is the majority of his points scored were in the third period. So he scored the most in the third period. Okay, that's interesting. Okay, why would he score more points in the third period than someone else? More goals and assists. Well, let's look at his fitness. Gretzky played a lot in the 70s and the 80s, in the 90s. They used to do blue line to blue line testing. So sprint tests on skates, go blue line, blue, rest, do it again, do it again. Gretzky's heart rate recovered faster than anyone else in the NHL of his time. They weren't really doing fitness testing. So, or fitness training. So no one really worked out. And then all of a sudden, Gretzky's the most fit guy in the league. So third period rolls around. When the guys had their smokes after the first and second period, Gretzky didn't smoke. He's still in shape. So he's able to actually pick off a lot of things and get a lot more points. So he had a very high, robust cardiovascular system. So he could measure in points in the third period. Gretzky was also very explosive too. So your cardiovascular health or assessment, you can use it in different ways. His resting heart rate was super low. Resting heart rate's a great one to look at. And you can use your resting heart rate to see if you're getting sick. If your average resting heart rate is anywhere between, say, 45 and 50 beats regularly, and then all of a sudden you see it goes 60 and up and you feel fine, you might be fighting something, which then might indicate you need to change your training around for the next day. Because when you're fighting a virus and you beat the shit out of your body in the gym, you increase your immunosuppression. So your chance of getting that inch or that virus and not battling it well goes down. So you don't want to push really hard when that's happening. So resting heart rate's a great metric to look at on a regular basis. I love using my resting heart rate when I'm doing competitions. As I get closer and I start seeing it drop down lower and lower and lower, I'm like, oh yeah, but my cardio is it's getting tuned, it's getting ready to go. And then when I do a competition, that night of sleep, my resting heart rate on average is about 10 beats higher, which is the exact same when I drink alcohol. So if I drink booze and I go to bed at night, my heart rate's 10 beats on average higher, and I don't sleep well. Obviously, it's alcohol. But it's crazy that after high intense activity, the same thing happens. That's because of the adrenaline. Both situations don't set me up for a good training session the next day. So I can use my resting heart rate, my lowest number in my sleep, to make proper suggestions for my health for the following day. Who's got better? HRV, HR, yeah, HRV, heart rate variability. You can see improvements on that. Heart rate variability is a very, it's a unique thing. Great way to use it is get a starting number. Be subjective with it. Do you feel like shit when you wake up in the morning or not? Make some changes in your life and see if that number does go up. So HRV on average goes down as you age, believe it or not. So your scores of in the ages of 60s compared to people's scores in their ages of 30s are going to be completely different. And HRV, for a kid is it doesn't matter. They can do anything. They're still going to have super high HRVs. Also with HRV is some people, they maximize their HRV numbers in the first bout of sleep in the night, and some people it's in the back end. So I fall into the back end area. I get my highest HRV scores between the hours of 4 a.m. and 5 a.m., 5:15, to the point where I actually change my working hours. Because I'm a personal trainer, 6 a.m., I've always trained people at 6 a.m., which means I get up at 4:45. Go to gym, train people at 6 a.m., always done that. But then when I started tracking my HRV, there'd be the occasional time where my 6 a.m. is on vacation. So okay, I'm going to sleep in till 5:30 instead of 4:45. I'll sleep into 5:30. Then all of a sudden, I look at my HRV scores. Man, I'm getting some big spikes there in that last hour. Is that a one-off? And then I started monitoring it. And guess what? Those are my prime sleep hours, to the point where I just stopped working 6 a.m. And I can tell you it's made an improvement. My energy throughout the day is a little bit better. My recovery from my training sessions are also better. And it just feels good not rolling into the gym at, 5:50 a.m. and it's minus 24 degrees compared to starting work at 7. So HRV is a little bit, it's a little bit variable from person to person, but it's another way to really assess your cardiorespiratory health. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just going to pause my chats right now. I'm going to open up to a few questions here. Do you guys have any? No? Okay, we'll keep going. So if we're going to talk about strength and then cardio, I talked about them separately, but how can we do the best of both worlds from a health perspective? By health perspective, let's look at longevity. Let's look at long term. If your connective tissues are weak, they're going to be more prone to getting injured. If your cardiorespiratory fitness is weak, you're going to be more prone to developing things like cardiovascular disease. You're going to be less likely to be robust and have energy at the same time. So you got to combine the two. How can you combine the two? What do you guys do here that challenges your strength and also challenges your cardio system? Jake, what are some things that you do? I haven't heard from you today. Might need to unmute yourself, my friend. I can't hear you.
You're on mute, Jake.
There we go.
Awesome. Oh, you're muted again. Double tapped.
All right. Finally. Sorry about that. Okay, we're on. I just think of those strength exercises to get the cardio going, right? You feel the sweat coming, right? And I don't know if this is right or wrong, but I think of, your squats or your lunges or already just doing split squats or splits, with the dumbbells, that kind of thing. Those are I hate, I was just telling my coach Mike, who I'm with, I was just telling him today, man, I just really hate doing those splits, buddy. It's just like, just do not look forward to those because they burn good. And it just really gets me pumped, right? It just gets the juices flowing pretty good. I don't know. Other than that, I really don't, that's why I'm on the call, I guess, is to see what shed some light on what that looks like. But
Which is good.
that's just what comes to mind. So.
Yeah, I was hoping eventually someone's going to mention compound movements. So that's what you just said to me. You do compound movements, you do lunges, you do squats. So an easy way to get the best of both worlds is choosing exercises and doing them hard that require a lot of muscle mass, a lot of joints, and heavy load mixed with high reps. So barbell squats, dumbbell squats, hack squats, lunge variations, they take into account the ankle joint, the knee joint, the hip joint. So it's got to be multiple joints involved, and on each side of the joint is going to be different muscles. So now we're using a lot of muscle, we're using multiple joints, and those muscles can take heavy loads. You can load them up. So you're going to get a lot of strength benefits from that aspect. There's a high energy demand, so your cardiovascular system has to then work to keep refueling to be able to do more and more repetitions. I don't care who's on this call. You give me enough runway, I can get everyone here out of breath doing walking lunges with body weight. Like you can get out of breath. You can doing just a body weight lunge. For some of us, it might be 50 reps. For some of us, it might be 400 reps. But eventually, your body cannot get the oxygenated blood to the muscle as quick as it takes to do the movement because it's a very compound movement. Contrast to a forearm muscle. If I'm doing wrist curls, forearm flexors, and I'm just doing wrist curls, I'm not going to get out of breath. My muscle will eventually collapse, not be able to do the movement anymore. My heart rate will probably elevate some. Maybe it'll go from like a 50 to a 90, maybe 100, but it's not going to hit that 160, 150. You're not going to be like this because it's just not enough muscle that your cardio system is like dominant over it. It's too easy for the heart and lungs. You need the bigger muscles to do that. So you can stress your cardio system by using big muscle groups and still get a strength benefit from it at the same time. You can also use resistance cardio. If you're a busy guy and you don't have time to schedule in these 60-minute cardio sessions a week, a couple of those a week, or long walks and stuff, you can go to the end of your workout session. You can put five or six plates on one of those sleds and you can just push and pull it for 10 minutes, just back and forth, back and forth. I love setting it up to do a push, have a TRX on the other end, grab the handle, walk backwards, do a sled drag, push, walk backwards, push, walk backwards. Set a timer for 10 minutes. Fantastic. Works really good. So that's a form of like resistance cardio. Those machines like an Echo bike or an Assault bike or an Airdyne bike, they now have resistance. It's one level of resistance. They don't get easier, they don't get harder. It's one level of resistance. So now you're asking your body to give you oxygenated blood to the working muscles, and there's resistance on there. You're going to get some strength benefits and some cardio benefits, and it doesn't take very long to do. Put your birthday calories on the bike and go ham on that. So compound movements are a great way to do that. Also, scheduling your workouts and making them specific. You can do resistance training, heavy strength, long rests, neurological adaptations on one day. The other day, it could be cardiorespiratory work. It could be something along the lines of a 60-minute aerobic session. It could be a ruck. It could be some interval work on the rower. Mike, we're kind of in this state right now. So Mike, why don't you just unmute yourself and say what your next phase of what you're going to be doing with your training and where you're making the adjustments.
I'm not sure if you're talking to me, Mike, or the other Mike, but
You.
you know, the one thing that came to mind when we're talking about strength and cardio, Fudgy's triangle. That always crushes me. And then some of the rowing with the pull-up, push-up variations, body weight squats, box jumps, all that has really gives me that explosion. Some of that stuff gives me some of that explosive strength. But also it's, you know, those things kick my butt.
You have to let the boys in on what Fudgy's triangle is, because right now it just sounds like a weird sex move.
It incorporates the rower back and forth. I call it the sled. It incorporates several different cardio, then moving into a strength form and then over into a cardio type movement. And you feel it when you're done.
Yeah, we just set up three exercises and we have a time frame. And each exercise, I'll program in maybe 3 minutes on, or distance on, or calories on. And you're going to go from one to the next to the next. So it's three in a row. It could be rower, sled push, it could be a echo bike. And you just one after the other, say 2 minutes on each one, or 3 minutes on each one. And you continually do that until you hit, say, 30 minutes. So what ends up happening is you don't get bored. And you're not doing the same thing over and over again. You're hitting different aspects of the body. The cardio system's getting work in, the strength work's getting in there as well. And it's kind of fun. And you could do those workouts with a training partner. He's each start on a different machine and you go through it. The days of just doing like long, slow cardio, I think they really they deter people from wanting to do them because they're boring. You can get a lot of benefits from them, but you can get a lot of benefits doing other things too. You got to still keep it challenging and really push the competitiveness in you.
Well, that's another thing that I liked is you try to find out how many rounds you can do. And in doing that, as you do this ongoing cycle over time, you find that, hey, I'm improving my cardiovascular fitness.
Yeah.
Things become easier. And you do more rotations throughout that cycle.
Yeah, it's real easy. It's black and white. If you can do more rounds for the same time frame, you're getting better. So we can look at like specific data to say like if you're healthy or not healthy with strength and with cardio. But the reality is, if you get out of breath easy, you got to work on some cardio. If day-to-day stuff around your house is hard, bringing your groceries in, moving a couch, you got to work on your strength, right? Look at the overall picture. What do you want to have? What do we want to have from a strength perspective? What do we want to have from a cardiovascular perspective? If you can be honest with yourself, you can look in the mirror right now and say, I'm shit at that. Like I'm trash at this one thing here, and I know I am. Prioritize that. Make that the new thing in your fitness right now, right? Because they go hand in hand. I've never met anyone too strong. I've never met anyone with too good a cardio. I've been like, man, it sucks to be that fit, right? But I've met a lot of people that are too weak. And I've met a lot of people that are out of shape. They don't have good cardio. And they can't do the day-to-day things. They're slugging it midday. They're exhausted all the time because they've got very low aerobic capacity. They can't do three exercises in a row because they don't have fitness. They can't train 5 days out of seven because they're so sore between each individual day because their aerobic capacity is poor. They can't pause squats. They can't pause a push-up because they've got no strength in those positions. How do we get better at doing those things? You just got to do them. You just got to do them. And in muscle intelligence, you know, we pride ourselves in finding ways to make them more exciting, more effective. You don't want to do long, slow cardio? No problem. Push and pull a sled for 10 minutes. It's going to burn more. It's going to challenge your mental toughness a lot more. But it's going to be done in 10 minutes versus 60 minutes of just walking on the treadmill. It's going to be harder for a short duration. But if you don't want to do it long and easy, that's the other way to go. So one is not necessarily going to be better than the other when it comes to strength and cardio for longevity. They both go hand in hand. As I mentioned, you know, a couple minutes ago, there's nobody too strong and there's nobody with too good of cardiorespiratory fitness. So I hope within the last hour, those are kind of the key things that you guys kind of took away from this. So I'll leave the last several minutes here open. If you guys have any specific questions regarding cardiorespiratory work, strength training stuff that I can answer for you now. Or if you want me to elaborate on anything that I was talking about a little bit earlier.
I got some for you.
Here.
I was just thinking, so say you're doing short bouts of really high intense stuff. If you keep doing that, you're eventually going to start building strength in that, right? So you could use that as a metric, right? You could start doing short bouts of something on, like, say, the air bike or sprints, right? And eventually that'll kind of translate over. And you'll feel the strength gains in whatever else you do, right?
Yeah, you can get anaerobic cardiovascular work can have carryover into strength more than aerobic can. Aerobic work is not going to give you the same tissue tolerance for power. So let me give you an example here. If you're doing explosive interval work, this could be on a skier and you're aggressively pulling down on that sucker, and you're just doing 20 seconds on, you know, maybe five rounds of something like that. The tissues up in here in your lats, the connective tissues there, they're going to get strong at those quick motions. So that could have a carryover in a pull-up. Pull-ups are not done for high reps. The musculature of the muscle fibers of the pull-ups are more fast twitch than slow twitch. So they fatigue really quick. They can't do a lot of repetitions. But Mike, if you said to me, I want to get better pull-ups, could I do interval work on the skier? I'd say, yes, that will help you with pull-ups. But if you came to me and said, Chris, I want to get better at swimming. I want to do the front crawl and I want to be able to swim, you know, 300 meters at a time, which is a very long endurance for swimming. Would the skier intervals help me with that? I would say not as good as long endurance skiing. So instead of doing the hard, aggressive ones, you'd be better off doing 2Ks on the ski erg where your power output would be much less, but you're going to build up the tissue tolerance to do the motion over and over again. It's like for Achilles tendons, people always think you got to do these real explosive movements to strengthen the Achilles tendon. From a sprinting perspective and a jumping perspective, absolutely. But from a running perspective, to build up your tolerance in running, you actually just got to get more feet on the ground by doing the running. So if you increase your volume of miles on running, you increase the tolerance for running. But if you're a jumper and you're a sprinter, you better be doing explosive jumping and sprinting for that. So you're right in what you're saying. You can just make it very specific for what you're looking for.
Cool. Yeah. Well explained. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Anyone else? Yes, John.
Chris, what would you see like a good progression like if you're doing jump rope training in terms of endurance? Because like I'm finding like in the challenge workouts, maybe it's because I've been away from things for so long, I'm having a really hard time sustaining 90 seconds or 75 seconds of nonstop jumping.
Like you just see gas out or you're bored?
I gas out.
Okay, you gas out. So where's the fatigue kicking? Is it the wrist? Is it the calves? Is it the cardio? You out of breath?
I think it might be my legs. It's just that I get to the point where my heart rate isn't up to the point where I'm shooting up, but I think I'm just it's the endurance factor.
Okay, so you trip up, you're going, then you just keep catching the rope. Yep.
I'm not necessarily tripping up, but I'm getting to the point where I'm feeling like I can't go.
Okay, well, I'm gonna break this down in separate pieces here. If you're out of breath and you just jump on the rope and it's 90 seconds, because jumping up and down does jack up the heart rate, going up and down, your body goes
Right.
through what's called PHA, peripheral heart activation. So your heart has to pump blood up and down, doing a jump-like motion and swinging the arms. So it's actually really good for people who have had like post-heart attacks. Not saying to go jump rope, but I'm saying to do exercises that forces the heart to pump blood up. So post heart attack, it's sitting in a chair and doing a shoulder press and then doing a leg extension. So the heart has to pump blood up and then down. So the same thing's happening when we're jumping rope. So that's a high cardio demand for you. So for you would just take your 90 seconds and you just do a 45 second, 10 second break and then do it again. Your
That's
fitness
what I've
is,
been doing.
yeah, your fitness is not just there. If you said to me like, yo, my calves are on fire when I do it, then you just don't have the endurance to do 90 seconds with your calves. But if you did jump rope multiple times a week, or you did some jumping or calf training multiple times a week, you'd build that up. For some of us, the forearms and the shoulders get tired from just the rope motion. That's endurance in the wrist or endurance in the shoulders in that motion. So they'd have to do more of that to get better at it. That's a very like skill specific thing. And if you keep tripping up on the rope, you just need to practice more. That's all. Skipping is not intuitive. It's not like walking. So yeah, that's how you would handle the skipping. Good question though. Okay, fellas, if that's it, I'll let you guys go. This is my
I
last
got
call.
one question for you, Chris. Sorry,
Okay,
last
Bill.
2 minutes if I could sneak it in.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to add more cardio in. Obviously, I'm still lifting, but I've been playing around with, after, again, I'm trying to grow my arms right now. So like after an arm day, I'm not that gassed. So I'm trying to do like a 10 or a 15 minute HIIT exercise immediately after that. Is that going to impact any of my gains, or is there a certain sign of spacing, or what's the
No, that wouldn't have a catabolic. So when I say catabolic, I mean breaking down of the body. When we want to grow, we want to be anabolic. So supplementation, sleep, training, all that makes your body think grow, 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 grow. If you were to say to me, Bill, if you're like, listen, man, I'm doing my arms, I want to grow my arms, then at the end of every session, I do a 10K run. I would say that could have catabolic effects. Because that's
right.
going to be an hour of energy expenditure. Your arms are all pumped up and they're now screaming for nutrients. I said, they feed me to really make protein synthesis happen. I need some calories in me right now. But you're gonna delay them another hour. And during that hour, you're gonna be draining your body of more energy. Your body's gonna probably go more catabolic. So if you keep your cardio in shorter bouts, 10, 15 minutes high intensity, then it shouldn't have any negative effect on your arm growth. If you do something even with your arms, it could be even more beneficial. Your amount of muscle soreness might also let you know that. So if you were to do like a ski erg or some battle ropes, or you're just doing a bunch of sled pulls and stuff, and the next day the arms are super sore, that might be good. But if they're too sore to move, you may have gone too far. But you can try doing a couple of things in there. Yeah, but if you're just doing 10 minutes afterwards, it shouldn't have any catabolic effect on arm growth.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries, my friend. No worries. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. It's the last time you're going to see this bald face for 2025. I'll be back on again in January. I always appreciate you taking the time to listen to these calls and also coming with good questions for me. I wish you all a very happy, healthy rest of 2025 and a Christmas break with you and yours. And I'll see you all again in January 2026.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.